Death is just a beginning. Part 2. Yusuf closed his eyes in exhaustion. It had taken 2 days to evade the Christian soldiers, yet somehow the number of civilians with him had grown, trickling in as single people or in small groups. Some Jewish, some Muslim. Each had their own stories of horror and fear, of seeing others ruthlessly cut down or attacked. One woman with a small child had the strangest story of all, saved by a Christian soldier. But not just any Christian, for his dirty clothing had once been white with the Red Cross of Genoa. It could not be the Genoese soldier, for Yusuf had killed him that last time. And why would a jinn save this woman and her child? When Yusuf fought him, he had seen no mercy for him or for his people in the Shaitan's mirror eyes, just cold indifference, hatred. After finding a safe haven for the refugees from Al-Quds, Yusuf sought fresh news of the invaders and learned of the Fatimid army slowly moving towards the seaport of Ashkelon. He might have been able to join them in the fight to take back Al-Quds. Yusuf was surprised when the elder from one of the families he had saved handed him enough coin to buy a horse. "I cannot accept. Please, it is the very least I can do to repay you for saving the lives of my wife and children. But surely you will need. We have family not far from here who will take us in. Thank you. May Allah bless you and keep you safe." The man bowed deeply in respect. "God be with you, too." Once he had found someone willing to sell him a horse, Yusuf joined a group of like-minded men who wanted to return to the fight for their people. One man, who had recently arrived by horse, brought news of even greater interest. "The pilgrims will be sending holy relics and treasures stolen from Al-Quds to their pope. They will be leaving at first light and will be using the old road from Al-Quds to the harbor at Azdud." Yusuf considered the logistics. It had taken 2 days to make this journey northwest of Al-Quds by foot, but they had needed to move at the pace of the slowest civilian and stop frequently to evade the Christian soldiers roaming the countryside. On horseback, it would take less than a day to get ahead of the Christians and prepare an ambush. They could recover the stolen relics and treasures and take them to a safe place until the Franks were forced back to their homelands across the sea. He was surprised to see all the men looking to him for a decision, but suspected he had the most experience, and not just of the road in question, having come from a merchant family. Yusuf had spoken to some of his part in the siege at Antioch, and they knew him, or of him, from those he had helped rescue from Al-Quds. "We can leave a few hours before dawn. Rest now," Yusuf ordered, aware of the exhaustion written across all their faces so clearly. They grumbled, but saw the sense of his words, retiring to the small tents in their makeshift camp. Between one breath and the next, Yusuf fell asleep, but just a few hours later he awoke with a start from another of the strange dreams that had plagued him from the moment of his first death. Two women, warriors, racing across an expanse of green, of grassland. He saw long, dark hair flowing and a joy-filled smile, almond-shaped eyes in a beautiful, delicate face. The other woman was beautiful, too, with pale eyes like the Genoese jinn, reflecting the color of a blue sky. She grinned at her companion, full of life and love. In other dreams, he had seen them cooking together and kissing each other. He had a sense of them drawing ever closer, as if they were slowly eating up the miles lying between him and them. It was disconcerting, especially as he felt a pull towards them in return, even though he had never felt a draw towards women before his first death. However, these were not the only dreams that disturbed his broken sleep, though the ones of the women were far different to those he had of the Genoese Shaitan. His dreams of the jinn were more surreal, focusing on his beautiful pale eyes, reflecting the horror of the world around them, filled with anger and hate. Where the dreams of the two women seemed to be an ever-changing present, his ones of the jinn were based solely on their past encounters. He saw them fighting, but with different outcomes. He saw Hashim fall beneath his own sword to save the jinn, witnessed the blood-filled grin as death claimed the jinn, only for Yusuf to bring him back to life with a kiss and a desperate prayer. Both sets of dreams had to hold meaning, but the ones of the jinn mortified him. He knew his subconscious had picked up on the startling elegance of the other as he fought, the way his whole body flowed from one movement into the next, belling his enemy. There was beauty, even in this ugliness. But Yusuf wondered why he had fixated on this one man, this jinn. Eventually, Yusuf fell back to sleep again, but this time no dreams plagued him, and he awoke feeling slightly more refreshed. The new day was still several hours away, but he could hear others already stirring, eager to get moving. "Let's do this," he said to himself. They rode for hours, stopping only once at a waterhole to allow the horses and riders a short respite. By Yusuf's estimation, they were but an hour ahead of the Frank's wagons, and Yusuf could recall a perfect spot for an ambush further along the road. He sent two men riding back up the road towards Al-Quds to spy on the Franks, wanting to know how many wagons and how many soldiers guarding them. They returned within half an hour. "There are 3 wagons and 40 Franks, 7 on horseback, the rest walking." 40? They must be carrying many important and expensive items. We should relieve them of their burden. He grinned, and the men laughed as Yusuf ordered the men into position. He set those with recurved bows on slightly higher ground to either side of the road, where the rocks gave them some cover, while the remainder waited on horseback in the shadows behind the rocky outcrops. All he needed to do now was wait until the wagons were passing between them, before giving the archers the sign to let loose the arrows, aiming for the wagoners and those on horseback first. The suddenness of the attack had the Franks scrambling for cover and unsheathing swords, perhaps a third of their number dead or incapacitated, before Yusuf led the charge on horseback, safe flashing as it reflected the rays of the sun, slicing and stabbing his way through the soldiers. He barely noticed the occasional gash across his own flesh, with the wounds healing swiftly. Eventually, they had cut down all of the soldiers, and Yusuf's men jumped onto the wagons to pull back the covers. They needed to distribute the contents onto the horses quickly, leaving the heavy, slow wagons behind. Yusuf was barely paying attention when the cover was removed from the last wagon to reveal a heavy metal box. It had an opening in the form of a large cross on each side, and on the top, to allow sight of the contents. Presumably, the cross was to mark this as property of the Christians and their Pope, and Yusuf was expecting it to be filled with larger treasures stolen from Al-Quds. Intrigued, he urged his horse forward, surprised to see the pale skin of a Frank curled into a fetal position inside a box barely large enough to contain his twisted and broken limbs. Through the cross window, at one end, he could see lank, greasy hair hung over the Frank's face, concealing his features. His body seemed covered in dry blood, and his wrists and ankles bound in chains attached to the wagon through the cross-shaped openings on the box. "We should leave him and..." No. Whoever he was someone of importance to the Franks and their Pope. Maybe as important as these holy relics and treasures. The man grinned. Ah, important enough that his corpse could be ransomed back to them. Exactly. Yusuf pushed a stick between the bars to lift the curtain of hair hiding the Frank's face. He drew back in instant recognition when pain-filled pale eyes fluttered open and stared straight into his. It wasn't a Frank. It was the Genoese jinn. Still alive, after all, for Yusuf would know those eyes anywhere. The patterns of dried blood across his back started to make sense. He had been whipped or flayed, but the rents into his flesh had healed over without leaving a scar, the lines and streaks of blood the only remaining record of his torture. "He cannot be alive in that small box," one of the men insisted, voice shaking. "It is not possible." Sahid found the keys on the body of one of the Franks, releasing the chains from the wagon and unlocking the box, but Yusuf insisted they leave the wrists and ankles shackled. They pulled back the lid, and two men dragged the body from the too small box. They dropped him to the dusty ground, pulling back in fear when they heard loud cracks and saw broken bones knitting back into place and blisters healing. All the men looked to Yusuf uneasily. "A djinn," one exclaimed. "Throw him over my horse," Yusuf ordered. No one moved. "Do it." He heard the grunt of pain from the djinn as they did as Yusuf asked, eager to hand over responsibility to another. By now the others had loaded the rest of the boxes onto the horses, including the 7 horses that had belonged to the dead Franks. As one, they turned and headed southwest across the arid land toward the city of Ashkelon, leaving the bodies and wagons far behind. As he rode, Yusuf glanced down at the djinn, intrigued by the way his skin grew red and blistered beneath the hot sun, then healed over and over. And yet he heard only the occasional hiss revealing any sign of pain. Yusuf suspected the djinn had died many times in the box on his journey from Al-Quds, and twice more over the last 4 hours, his body going limp, labored breath stilling. At first it was amusing, letting him suffer, but Yusuf recalled how his own wounds had hurt every time he was injured or maimed. Excruciating pain that only dulled as the wound closed or the injury healed. With annoyance at his own soft heart, he decided even a shaitan deserved a little compassion. Yusuf pulled his cloak off and hung it over the djinn's pale skin to protect it from the worst of the sun, but he offered him no water and was almost certain he died a third time, probably of thirst, only to revive with a weak gasp. "We should make camp ahead," one of the men shouted. "There is a water hole." They reached the water hole within the hour. Yusuf pulled the unconscious or possibly dead again djinn off his horse, chaining him to a scraggly palm growing close to the water, but freeing his ankles this time. He was tempted to torture him by leaving him just out of reach of desperately needed water, but it seemed petty. So Yusuf filled a cup, waiting for signs of returning life, before he forced the djinn to drink, sighing when he spluttered and coughed back up at least half of it. With dusk approaching, Yusuf joined his companions in prayer, helping with setting up the camp before the sun set, and then joining them again in prayer. Guards were set, and Yusuf took first watch. Crawling into his bed a few hours later, his eyes captured for a moment by pale eyes glinting in the moonlight from beneath strands of dirty, greasy hair. The djinn had not spoken a single word in all this time, not even to curse him. When Yusuf awoke with a gasp, his hand flung to his throat, coming away sticky with blood, the sun was close to rising, a gray pre-dawn lighting the world as he looked towards the tree. He was not surprised to find the djinn missing. He had escaped his chains and had slit Yusuf's throat while he slept. "Coward!" he exclaimed, quickly wiping away any signs of his death before anyone else spotted him and called him a djinn too. Yusuf went to the palm tree. The chains were still bound around it, but the wrist bracelets were slick with blood and torn flesh, so the djinn must have dislocated his thumbs and gouged his own skin to get out of the shackles. It explained why he had also been folded into such a small box by the Franks, to make it impossible for him to have room to escape. They may have deliberately broken his bones just to keep him contained and subdued. He gathered up the chains. Yusuf called to the others when he noticed one of the horses was missing. "Take the holy relics to Ashkelon. I will go after the djinn." "I will go with you," one brave soul volunteered, but Yusuf shook his head. "No, Sahid, the relics are more important than this creature. Go." He watched as they mounted up and left before turning his horse away to follow the tracks the djinn had left behind. He was heading north. 2 hours later, Yusuf heard a horse whinny and came upon it nibbling on scraggles of grass, its rider nowhere to be seen. He backtracked until he found signs of a fall, following fresh tracks of bare feet that left droplets of blood every so often. no doubt his feet healing almost as quickly as they were injured by the stony ground and the coarse and spiny vegetation. Yusuf caught a flash of movement ahead and kicked his horse on just a little faster. The djinn was a pale flash of skin and bone, staggering ahead of him, and Yusuf caught up easily. "Where are you running to?" The djinn tensed, but otherwise ignored him and kept going, falling, scrambling back to his feet, and staggering on again, occasionally glancing over his shoulder as Yusuf paced him on horseback. Yusuf sighed and repeated his question. This time he tried it in Greek, one of the many trade languages he had become fluent in as he helped his father in the family merchant business. "Where are you running to, djinn?" The djinn looked back sharply, as if he recognized the words, slowing and eventually stopping to lean over with forearms braced on his thighs, panting hard. He stared back at Yusuf from beneath the curtain of his lank, dirty hair. "Your homeland is that way," Yusuf continued in Greek, pointing towards the west, whereas the djinn had still been heading north. Yusuf snorted as the djinn seemed to deflate further as he followed Yusuf's pointing finger. Quite obviously, he didn't like being laughed at, and he brandished the dagger he had stolen from Yusuf, likely the one he had used to slit Yusuf's throat earlier. Yusuf shook his head in amusement. "You are nothing but a bag of bones. Why don't we stop and have something to eat before you try to kill me again?" "Why don't I kill you and eat you out?" Yusuf pursed his lips to hold back a laugh. Greek was a very old but still a living language, and what the djinn said was perfectly understandable, if very rusty, except the meaning of that particular phrase had changed from his classic days. He cupped his groin. "I don't think there's enough seed in here to fill your empty belly." "What?" Pale eyes grew wide in shock. "I did not." "I do have musakan and tabun. Chicken and bread we could share, and perhaps afterwards you could have some of this for dessert," he replied slowly, jiggling his hand where it was still cupping his groin. The djinn's pale face had turned a mottled shade of red beneath the grime. He looked enraged, and if looks could kill, then Yusuf would be falling off his horse to the ground, stone dead. But that did not deter Yusuf in the slightest. "It is a generous portion of musakan, from a grateful family, I say, from all your slaughter in Al-Quds," Yusuf added. The djinn slid dramatically and lowered the dagger, and Yusuf smiled because he knew when he had won. He looked around. "You have run to a very fine place to set up camp, though perhaps we could go to the other side of those rocks for greater protection from the sun." He pointed to where there was some shade. "After we have eaten, I can kill you with my bare hands for a fourth time." Yusuf held up four fingers. "Perhaps slit your throat in return, or bash your head in with a rock." "And I will kill you to the same number." "Ah, yes. It is to my eternal shame. I have lost many times to a bag of bones. But in my defense, I was merely an artist and a scribe before picking up this sword to save my people, with only a small amount of training thrust upon me by my merchant father. May Allah have mercy upon his soul." The djinn frowned again, his Greek obviously not good enough to follow Yusuf completely. By now, Yusuf had dismounted and was leading the horses to the other side of the small bank of loose rocks before tying them up. The djinn followed at a distance, dagger still in hand. Yusuf pulled his spare tunic from his bag and threw it towards the djinn. "The sight of your sunburned flesh over sharp bones, and the cavity of your empty belly and exposed genitals makes me feel uncomfortable and strangely compassionate." The djinn held the material bunched in his large hands for a moment before deciding to pull the tunic over his head. Yusuf noticed the djinn was almost of a similar height and build to himself, so the tunic came to just below his knees, which was good. The djinn crouched down and watched from a distance while Yusuf built a small fire and heated the popular Levantine dish before offering small prayers and thanks to Allah. Yusuf watched him carefully from the corner of his eye as the djinn edged closer slowly, more like a frightened animal than something almost human. He sat down in the shade, narrowed eyes still partially hidden by the lank hair flopping over his forehead. The djinn looked exhausted beneath the grime and sweat, likely not having slept for days, except in death. "I assume your people took offense at your nature, and possibly your stench, though that is less likely, as all Franks stink." The djinn looked across at him in confusion. "They tortured you and chained you up in a small metal box. They left you without food and water under the hot sun." Yusuf pointed up at the sun. The djinn stayed silent, but he did look away, unable to meet Yusuf's eyes. Perhaps they intended to see if you were Shaitan or Malak. The djinn looked back at him questioningly, a demon or an angel. Yusuf hummed under his breath. "I think they already decided you were a demon, for I do not think they would treat you so poorly if they thought you could be an angel." He frowned when the djinn still remained silent. "You do not talk much." "You talk too much. Maybe he stumbled over a word. "Fix that by cutting out tongue next time." Yusuf laughed. "You are a very funny man." He turned his attention back to the pot of moussakan heating over the fire, letting silence fall between them until it was ready to eat. Yusuf supplemented the dish with dried figs, hard cheese, and the taboon flatbread, passing a share of the food across to the djinn. He watched as the djinn nibbled at the food, even though Yusuf could tell he was starving, chewing each tiny bite many times before swallowing. It made Yusuf feel sad because it proved the djinn had known hunger for many years, perhaps from long before he stepped off the ship to march on Al-Quds. But at least it proved he was not a ghoul, consuming the flesh of other men on the battlefield like those Yusuf had seen in Antioch. "We call us demon." The djinn struggled with his Greek. "I do not feel like a demon." "You slaughtered women and children in..." "No. I kill only those holding weapon to me. Soldiers." "I do not recall raising a weapon to you while I slept last night," he snapped back angrily. The djinn looked away, face heated in shame. "Perhaps wrong, but I knew you come. I hoped you die so I get far." Yusuf shrugged. "I am a heavy sleeper. You should have let me sleep," he added around a mouthful of bread, waggling a finger between them. "I would not have noticed you were gone for many more hours." "I will remember next time," the djinn added dryly. Yusuf chuckled. "My name is Yusuf ibn Ibrahim ibn Muhammad ibn al-Khazani, known as al-Tayyib." He watched as the djinn tried to mimic his name silently but unsuccessfully and sighed. "You can call me Yusuf." The silence lengthened until Yusuf raised both eyebrows questioningly. The djinn sighed this time. "Nicolo." "Nicolo what?" "Nicolo. Just Nicolo. No family name, no father or grandfather to honor. Just Nicolo from Genova." Yusuf saw Nicolo's eyes widen. Your outer garment, before it became so grimy as to be nearly unrecognizable, was the white and red cross of Genova. "See, Nicolo di Genova." "So there is no one who will pay a ransom for you. No noble family wishing for the return of their son." Nicolo looked away, eyes lowering and lips hardening as if in sadness or regret. "No." "Then it is just your Pope who might be willing to pay a huge sum to see a Shaitan in the flesh." "I give him your flesh," Nicolo snapped back, his eyes flashing angrily. Yusuf could also see fear, unsurprisingly, because his future would have held nothing but a cycle of torture, pain, and death, all the way across the Great Sea to his Pope, and perhaps even worse, beyond. As much as he hated this djinn for what he had brought upon Yusuf's people, and especially for killing Hashim, he would not wish that fate on even this worst of his enemies. Yet he could not let this man think him soft-hearted. "No, I will not give your Pope such a great prize. Equally, I cannot allow you to kill any more of my countrymen in your mistaken belief that we are savages stealing what does not belong to you." Yusuf saw Niccolo's lips twist in a sneer as he recognized the gist of Yusuf's words, even if he could not follow them all. His pale eyes narrowed with hate, but otherwise he remained silent, which was probably for the best, as Yusuf was this close to changing his mind and selling him to his pope into an eternity of pain. Feeling malicious, he added, "Of course, if I cannot ransom you back to your people, then all that's left is the slave market, though I don't know how much anyone would pay for such a stinking bag of bones, Frank." "Fuck you," Niccolo snarled back, at least recognizing the insult this time. Yusuf huffed derisively because "fuck you" was one Greek phrase they both understood. Niccolo took ages eating his share of the food, wincing occasionally and reaching for water, but Yusuf was aware of the bland food cooked by these northern dogs compared to the rich, spicy, and aromatic dishes of his people. It made a mockery of their claims, of calling his people heathens and savages. Yusuf glanced up at the clear sky. By now the sun was well past its zenith, but he felt no rush to get moving. He trusted his brothers to get the holy relics and other treasures to Ashkelon without his assistance, and felt this djinn, this Niccolo di Genova, warranted equal attention, though Yusuf had no clue what to do with him. Instead, they stared at each other across the small fire, waiting each other out as the hours passed and dusk turned to darkness as the sun set. Yusuf had seen the dark circles below Niccolo's eyes, hoping the days with no sleep and the meal would weigh him down, as Yusuf had no intention of falling asleep, only to wake up later from yet another death and the loss of all his possessions and the horses. He barely hid a smirk as he saw Niccolo's eyes grow heavy-lidded, his head jerking once as he caught himself drifting off. All the while, Yusuf kept up a flow of words, letting them lilt into a soothing cadence like a lullaby, seeing the way Niccolo drooped more with each passing minute until finally he was asleep. He watched and waited until he was certain Niccolo was sleeping deeply, before quietly moving across the space between them, taking the dagger from his lax fingers and plunging it through the djinn's heart. He felt a moment of regret as he saw betrayal in the large eyes, wide open as death claimed him. While Niccolo was dead, Yusuf slipped a metal collar around his neck, attached the long chain, and secured the other end to a heavy rock. "Let's see you get out of that, Shaitan," he murmured, finally feeling safe to lie down and sleep on the opposite side of the fire. Niccolo cursed as he quietly tugged at the collar, hoping it would give. He cursed the metal and chain tying him down. He cursed the rock it was securely wrapped around. He cursed the heathen demon for taking advantage of his exhaustion, for enslaving him. But mostly he cursed himself, for believing he was strong enough to stay awake until Yusuf had fallen asleep. He should have known better than to expect any decency from Yusuf. All his life he had been told about these people and their heathen ways, how they had laid claim to Christian holy sites and set up their own places of worship on top, stealing or destroying holy artifacts or claiming them for their own faith, how they had exiled God-fearing Christians from the holy city of Jerusalem, banishing them from both pilgrimage and prayer, sweeping across the Levant, subjugating, persecuting, killing, and enslaving Christians for not being willing to convert to their strange beliefs in false God. Pope Urban had urged all Christians to free the Holy Land from the heathens and restore it to its rightful owners, his Christian brethren. This was why he had exchanged his priestly robes for a soldier's hauberk and come on this pilgrimage, to fight in God's name, knowing all his sins would be forgiven should he perish on the battlefield doing God's work, and he would be welcomed into the kingdom of heaven, into Christ's open arms. He had done all that was asked of him. He had fought against those trying to prevent or undo God's work. He had breached the walls of the holy city, freeing it so Christianity could flourish within its walls once more. He had died for his Lord, not once but many times, both before and since praying at the Holy Sepulchre, and yet he had been denied God's grace and glory on each occasion. Instead of being hailed as a soldier of God, his own people had turned their backs on him. In just 2 days that seemed to last an eternity, they had beaten and tortured him, had killed him over and over. He had been gutted and sliced, flayed and hanged, had limbs severed and screamed in agony as they grew back. He had been spat upon, burned, and cursed before they decided he should be sent to Pope Urban for a full exorcism to see if it was possible to save his eternal soul. So they had chained him, broken his bones, and stuffed him into a small metal box, leaving him with no food or water to die over and over from heat, thirst, and starvation in some vain attempt to weaken the demon inside of him. Even his dreams had brought nothing but horror as the two women clung on to each other, one crying, one shocked, but both raging. Since Francesco first raised the alarm against him, Niccolò had found no mercy, not until this heathen released him from the box, covered his body from the harshness of the sun, and gave him water to drink. He had believed it was just a ruse to tempt him from his faith, to break him. But those last few hours, sharing a meal in the heat of a fire after the sun had set, had lulled him into hoping it was no demon trick. He had his answer now. Niccolò froze when the heathen showed signs of waking, looking around in desperation for a weapon of any kind, eyes fixing on a stone as he recalled Yusuf saying he would bash his head in with a rock. He reached out, and it was scant inches from his outstretched fingers, but even the pain of the collar choking him as it crushed his windpipe, even with the trickle of blood from where the harsh metal cut deep, he could not bring his fingers close enough to grab the stone. "Now you see why I chained you up." Niccolò froze again, as a shadow cast over him, silently cursing afresh. He had been so busy trying to reach the stone, he had not seen the heathen rise. "I shared my food with you, my fire, and you would have returned my hospitality by bashing in my skull and stealing all I possess." Niccolò let the chain slacken, drawing in blood-choked gasps until his new injuries healed. He couldn't deny the thought had crossed his mind before he fell asleep last night, though he had planned to leave one of the water skins, and maybe some of the bread, as repayment for the perceived kindness. He rubbed at his chest at the dried blood and the hole in his clothing from where Yusuf had killed him again last night. "You kill me while I sleep." He glared up through matted and lank hair at the heathen. "Returning the favor," Yusuf replied before scrunching up his nose in disgust. "You smell so bad, I'm surprised the..." "Do not circle above you," circling his fingers in air above their heads. So even though Niccolò did not recognize all the words, he got the meaning. Niccolò knew he smelled bad, and he couldn't recall the last time he'd had a decent bath. He was certain it was before he left Genoa, before that final mass. As a priest, he was not allowed to frequent any of the city bathhouses as they were considered dens of iniquity, full of prostitutes and debauchery. His church had its own small bathhouse with water piped in and a paid attendant, and though he was only obligated to fully bathe 4 times a year, he had attended most months without censure. On days when he did not have a bath, he would wash himself from a basin of cold water using a wet cloth, so he was hardly the stinking Frank of Yusuf's insults, not normally. Since arriving in the Holy Land, water had been scarce with barely enough to drink, so bathing or washing was out of the question. The sand and dirt got everywhere, and if there was no water to drink, then there was certainly none for cleaning his clothing or his body. By the time he reached Jerusalem, he was rank from dirt, sweat, and old dried blood, both his and that of the men he had killed or wounded in combat. Francesco had watched with greedy eyes as his filthy hauberk, tabard, and undergarments were stripped from him, leaving him naked beneath the hot sun. He had felt the man's unwelcome touch on his skin as he was tied upright to a pole, the brush of a knuckle across his exposed groin, before Francesco tore the gold cross from his neck. The torturer stepped forward with his instruments, and by the time they stuffed him into that small metal box, he was covered in more dirt, blood, excrement, spit, and other body fluids he was too ashamed to name, though at least they had not raped him. They had not wanted to risk the demon inside him from entering their own bodies. He stank of a dozen deaths and 100 abuses by their hand. "You smell so bad, I am surprised any horse would carry you as far as it did," Yusuf continued, as he packed up the camp and readied the horses, but his voice held a little edge of discomfort. Eventually, Yusuf came over, and, as Niccolo expected, the heathen wrapped the chain around his saddle so Niccolo would be pulled along behind on his bare feet, just like any prisoner of war on his way to a slave market. He kept his hands raised on the chain to keep it slack against his throat, unable to speak, while Yusuf kept up his chatter as they plodded along slowly. Occasionally he stopped to allow Niccolo to regain his feet after a fall, but Niccolo figured at least that was better than letting him be dragged along the coarse ground by his neck behind the horse, even if his wounds would heal quickly, and far better than being stuffed back into that metal box. Niccolo walked for what seemed like hours. He was exhausted, stumbling more often as the day progressed, no longer able to raise his head, focused instead on the back hooves of the horse and the swish of its tail that provided occasional relief from the sand mites and flies biting him. It was a sound that caught his attention first, but by the time he recognized it, he was up to his knees in sun-warmed water. Startled, he pulled back, losing his footing, going down and under. The chain slackened, and he regained his feet, spluttering as he coughed up some of the water he had swallowed. He flipped his wet hair back off his face for the first time so he could glare at his captor, too annoyed to notice the way the heathen's eyes widened and lips parted momentarily before the now familiar smirk returned. Before he could curse Yusuf, his brain caught up. Water. Warm, clean water flowing over him. He sank back down into the now deeper water, letting it take the heat off his skin, along with the dirt and blood. He unfastened and pulled off the shirt, flinging it onto a protruding rock, and let the water rush over his naked flesh, dipping his head and scraping his fingers through the matted strands to loosen the dirt and dried blood. "Here," Yusuf called, and Niccolo looked up in time to catch a bar of hard soap. It smelled like the heathen, clean and pleasant. As he washed, Niccolo cast occasional glances toward the water's edge where Yusuf had sat down to watch him. Niccolo stood up facing away so he could wash the more intimate parts of his body, yet aware of the heat rising in his face from embarrassment. That was surprising, really, feeling embarrassed by his nudity in front of this one man, after the days he had spent naked and vulnerable while he was tortured in full view of anyone entering the Holy Sepulchre. He looked up in alarm when Yusuf stood up and began removing his clothing, quickly stripping down until all that remained was an undergarment covering him from his waist to his knees. Everything else was visible, his firm chest with the barest smattering of dark hair, part of his well-muscled stomach, his shoulders and strong arms. His skin was a warm, sun-kissed color, and he was beautiful, radiant. Niccolo swallowed hard and looked away, focusing on washing the grime from his body and hair and pushing down on the desire and temptation that filled his mind and firmed his cock. This man truly was a demon, intent on seeing Niccolo's vows crumble to dust so the devil could drag another soul down to hell, his soul. He had to stand firm, and yet his own hands gliding over his skin betrayed him with desires, with imaginings of this demon's hands upon his body. Unable to squash these sinful thoughts, he turned them instead to his body with a critical eye. The soap bar dragged over prominent ribs, into the hollowed curve of his empty stomach, noting at least he had more flesh over his bones now than in the last days at Antioch, when so many died of hunger. He recalled wondering then if he might be too weak to pick up his heavy sword, let alone fight, drawing his strength and determination from his love of God, from his desire to find salvation and be forgiven for his lust-filled sins. He has sung Gloria before the final battle, exalting God's name, and the song had been picked up by the desperately tired and starving men around him, ex-priests and soldiers, voices lifting, giving them strength and faith when their bodies were tempted to fail them. He started singing it again now, hoping God would hear his lone voice and take mercy on him. No voices joined him this time, and as he sang the Amen, there was only the silence of the world around him, but it had given him peace nonetheless, steadying his heart and quieting his mind. When he looked back at the heathen, he found him standing at the water's edge, staring at him with an undecipherable expression. Niccolo gathered up his shirt, scrubbing it a little before pulling on the wet cloth to shroud his body. Niccolo waded towards the water's edge, keeping his distance from the other man, and sat down on a flat rock with his feet still dangling in the cooling water. He watched as Yusuf washed his arms, hands, face, and feet before returning to his horse and unrolling a small rug. Niccolo had seen this many times since arriving in the Holy Land and made no comment when Yusuf began his prayers. Almost mesmerized by the series of movements of standing, kneeling, and prostrating until he uttered the final words, "Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah," looking first to the right, then repeated, looking to the left. Yusuf raised a single eyebrow at Niccolo afterwards, and Niccolo finally looked away. His fingers tugged at the metal collar that chafed the damp skin of his neck. Niccolo wasn't sure the heathen would be as generous with his food today, though going hungry was nothing new to him since leaving behind his privileged noble life for the church. He watched from his perch on the rock as Yusuf built a small fire and began cooking, wishing he could stop his empty stomach from complaining as the delicious aroma filled the air. "Come, eat," Yusuf stated some time later, setting a bowl and some of the flatbread on the ground halfway between them, once more showing Niccolo a mercy he wasn't certain he deserved. Or maybe the demons simply sought to tempt him further. Niccolo knew he ought to refuse, but he had already starved to death several times since arriving in the Holy Land, an unpleasant, slow, and lingering death that had not taken him into his Lord's arms. He moved forward slowly, eyes firmly fixed on Yusuf as he snatched up the bowl and bread before retreating back to his rock, offering a simple prayer of thanks to God before taking his first bite. It was richer and spicier than Niccolo could normally stomach, making his eyes water, but it filled the emptiness. Through all this, Yusuf barely paid any attention to him, just an occasional quick glance as they continued to eat their portions of the cooked meal. You have a beautiful voice. Yusuf looked at him, head tilted in question. Perhaps they were wrong and you are Malak? Yet if that were true, then you would not be fighting on their side. Niccolo recalled Francesco's words that Lucifer had been the most beautiful of God's angels before the fall. Perhaps this demon before him was Lucifer, for certainly his smile brightened the world around him. Lucifer the morning star, the light bringer. Yet if this man was Lucifer, then who was he? Niccolo did not feel divine in any sense of the word, neither angelic nor demonic. He felt human in all the ways that mattered except for his inability to die. He felt pain when he was injured, sorrow when he looked upon the broken bodies of women and children, and contentment when he shared his devotion to God with his brethren. Happiness and pleasure had eluded him from the first time he looked upon another man's body with desire and felt the burning shame and anger of his father's fists and switch. But that was the cross he had to bear for his perversion. Having looked upon this heathen and found the desire still burning in his heart, he had to acknowledge that not even his many deaths had relieved him of his sin. If anything, his strong reaction to Yusuf's half-naked body had driven him even further away from the path of salvation. Much to Niccolo's confusion, Yusuf made no attempt to pack up the horses following the meal. Instead, setting up camp for the night. Not that he wasn't grateful. Walking for hours under the hot sun had exhausted him beyond the recuperative abilities of warm water or his strange healing. If I say on Lord's name not to kill you, or run, then perhaps you take these chains off of me? Niccolo asked in his broken Greek, pulling at the collar. I would very much like to believe you, but you are a djinn, and djinns lie. Yusuf shrugged, adding more, but Niccolo could not quite understand, though he thought it was something to do with beauty and blood. We will stay here tonight. Perhaps I will sell you tomorrow. You may be worth more now you no longer stink. Chained some distance away from Yusuf and the fire, Niccolo shivered in the cold of the night, sleeping fitfully. He dreamed of the two strange women again, women unlike any he had seen in true life, seeing them through each other's eyes as they talked earnestly and kissed beside a warm fire. He awoke shivering, wondering if it was simply his mind playing tricks on his cold body. With many hours until sunrise, he huddled into himself and, still exhausted, fell asleep again despite the cold. Niccolo awoke sometime later feeling far warmer, realizing someone, Yusuf, had draped a cloak over him as he slept. The man in question was now rising to start his morning prayers, and Niccolo remained still, pretending to be asleep as he watched him stealthily beneath lidded eyes. Niccolo was enchanted by the way the dark curls of his hair bounced as he bowed and supplicated in prayer. He wondered if they were as soft as they looked, his fingers itching to reach out and touch, even though that was an impossibility at this moment. He knew he ought to look away, to resist the temptation of this demon before it cost him his soul. But there was something so compelling about this man, especially in the way his beautiful brown eyes sparkled when something about Niccolo amused him. Yusuf turned to him at the end of his prayers and smirked, eyes sparkling, just as Niccolo remembered, causing his heart to skip a beat. I know you are awake. Niccolo pushed up onto one elbow, holding Yusuf's eyes for far longer than would be considered polite, swallowing hard when they both looked away at the same time. He felt the heat rise in his face and sink to his groin, cursing his paler skin that made it so obvious how Yusuf's gaze had flustered him. Yusuf continued to smirk, and this served only to anger Niccolo further, knowing the demon was preying on his weakness. The smirk faded under Niccolo's baleful glare, becoming just as cold, and Niccolo was not surprised when he spent the next few hours suffering yet another long walk under the hot sun, pulled behind the heathen's horse by the chain attached to the metal collar around his neck. He had to keep both hands firmly on the chain to avoid being dragged off his feet. With his focus on putting one foot in front of the other, he failed to notice the slowly increasing number of people passing by, until one man must have grown tired of being caught behind Yusuf's slower-moving horses and snapped a whip at Niccolo, catching him high on the back. He gasped, arching away from the pain, lost his footing and stumbled to his knees, dragged along the dirt and gravel road for several feet before Yusuf noticed. Angry words were exchanged between Yusuf and the other man, words spoken in a language Niccolo could not understand except for a few choice phrases. "Dirty Frank," the man spat on him as he walked on, and Niccolo wiped it from his cheek with the sleeve of his now torn and tattered tunic. Niccolo could see the gates of the town just ahead, and guessed Yusuf was going to make good on his threat to sell him in the slave market. He glanced up every now and then, only to catch the eye of someone passing by, looking at him in either intrigue, malicious glee, or in hatred. It was a relief when Yusuf finally stopped at a small inn, except Niccolo spent the rest of the day and the night chained up in the stable with the horses. Just another piece of livestock. But at least he had shade from the sun during the day and a reasonably comfortable bed of straw keeping him warm that night. He dreamed again that night. And in that dream, the women were riding hard across the grasslands, expressions fierce and determined. There was a sense of them drawing closer with each passing minute, as if it was their destiny to meet. He awoke scared, but strangely it was not of the women so much as for the fate that lay before him this day. He had not seen Yusuf since he was chained up in the stable, not even to give him something to eat, so he was hungry. But again, that was nothing new. He didn't get back to sleep this time, his mind churning with fear. When morning came, Yusuf dragged him through the streets to the slave market. And though they were of a similar height and build, the months of starvation had wasted not just the flesh from his bones, but had taken much of his strength from him too. He couldn't break free. Not that there was anywhere for him to run. The square ahead was full of people jostling and shouting, some bidding, while others mocked or called for information. From the edge, he saw men and women, mostly naked, pulled onto a platform one at a time to be sold. Some were pale-skinned like him, captured soldiers or deserters, or perhaps some of the men and women who followed the Christian soldiers, providing skills needed beyond fighting, enslaved while trying to get back to their homelands rather than starve to death. "You do not do this," he begged of Yusuf, in the only language they shared. Nicolo saw Yusuf's face harden in resolve, expecting to be dragged forward and handed over to the slave auctioneer. But instead, Yusuf pulled him back into the streets and strode away from the market. Nicolo followed meekly this time and was almost relieved when he found himself back in the stable, chained up with the horses again. He drew his knees up to his chest, wrapping his arms around them and dropping his head, not wanting anyone to see the sting of tears that threatened to fall. To be continued.